You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Welcome to Fraupow. We're your hosts, Odd and Rags.
So this week we are interviewing Allie Clayton. She is, as you will be able to tell pretty quickly, from the South. She used to be involved in pageants. Now she is a New Yorker who is proud and out, also loves cowboy boots, and she is a comedian, and she's pretty fucking hilarious. Allie's been performing for about 10 years, and she got her start at the Actors Theater of Louisville and the Second City Conservatory in Chicago, where she spent 8 years working her way up, and now she's here in New York doing her thing. She has been here since 2016, and she was recently featured on Vice's Funny How and was just selected to participate in this year's Stand Up NBC Showcase, which is pretty cool. So congrats on that.
Thank you.
And welcome.
Thank you.
So I'm going to start off like pretty soft.
Okay.
So like tell us about yourself. Where'd you grow up?
Well, I grew up in Rougemont, North Carolina, but nobody knows where that is, so I say Durham, because it's Durham County.
Mm-hmm.
But I grew up on a farm. We sold miniature horses and donkeys, and then we stopped doing that, and we got a bunch of exotic animals.
Like, exotic how?
Like a lion and a tiger.
To keep, and, or like as a zoo, or like to like okay, so, to do what with? I'm always intrigued by like people who keep these types of animals.
Yeah, it wasn't legal. well, like, so we're like very much like the Beverly Hillbillies. Like, nobody in my family has any money, but then like my dad hit it real big as a lawyer, so he got this big house, and he's like, "Let's get some monkeys." Like, just totally fine with it. And my brother is he's actually a monkey doctor now. He's a primatologist. He has two doctorates. And
I didn't know you could do that.
I have a friend who's a primatologist.
I mean, I knew you could be a primatologist, but I didn't know that was like meant you like, you know, I thought if you were vet, you had to like, not like vet and then like, anyways, we're
continue.
Done now. Edit that out.
But he was real into animals, specifically into primates, and like when I was like sneaking off and getting high and trying ecstasy for my first time, my brother was just like in his room with a binder memorizing like monkeys' brain weights.
And that's funny because that's
not what, fucking
that's what my partner did, but with Civil War maps. He redrew them.
But now he has two doctorates, so
it paid off.
Yeah, it definitely all paid off. But yeah, but by the time I was 21, my dad didn't pay any of his taxes and went bankrupt, and they took our animals.
What was your favorite animal?
It was a monkey named Clayton. He was a capuchin. My last name is also Clayton. He was named when we got him, and I think that was monkey fate.
Oh, yes.
Thought about that one a lot.
So how did you decide to go into acting?
So I'm super dyslexic. Got diagnosed when I was 8 years old. I got caught in the third grade having my kindergarten reading buddy read to me. Third graders were supposed to go in and read to the kindergartners each week. And my buddy always wanted to read Berenstain Bears. And, that's a lot of words.
Yeah, Berenstain in itself is a barrier.
Yeah, ugh. And the teacher noticed one day that I wasn't reading to my, I was having the kindergartner read to me. I'm like, I already taught him. Look how good he's doing.
I was going to say, that's entrepreneurial spirit right there.
Yeah, so couldn't read, but pretty clever. And so I love this story, telling the story that when my mom told me I was dyslexic, I was scream crying, and she was just like, and it's great because you're going to go to special school. And I was like, it's not special school. It's stupid school. And mom's like, it's not. Dyslexic people aren't stupid. Did you know Albert Einstein was dyslexic? And I just looked at her and said, who is that? And then she said, well, did you know Cher's dyslexic? And I was just like, I'm listening.
She should have known then.
Yeah, I did. I loved, my mom would get drunk and dress up as Cher a lot throughout my childhood. Got some great pictures of that.
I just had the visual of the movie Dumpling.
Yes. Yeah.
Have you seen Dumpling?
Yeah, I have. Okay. Also, there's no G on the end of that.
Dumpling.
Yeah.
Sorry. There you go. Dumpling.
Yeah.
Dolly Parton is an idol. You need to respect her.
So that's how I got into doing beauty pageants, was literally I couldn't read. So mom was like, we got to find something to raise her self-esteem. We'll let her be judged by her looks. And I didn't like the competitive parts of it. Some of the little girls could be real bitches. And some of the parents were really insane. But I liked being on a stage.
What did you do for your talent?
I sang show tunes.
Ooh.
But for my very first pageant, my mama had her best friend Woody, who was also her hairdresser / I think the only gay man out in North Carolina at the time. He did my hair and makeup, and I looked like a drag queen. And they had me, and because Woody would do drag at our house when my mom would dress up, they would just get drunk and do drag shows in the living room. And so Woody did all my hair and makeup, and they had me be Reba McEntire. And they didn't even let me sing. They were like, you have to lip sync. I guess Woody just felt like that's what he could coach the best. And so Woody coached me to do Reba McEntire's Fancy Don't Let Me Down.
Mm-hmm.
That song is about a mama convincing her daughter to become a prostitute.
Yeah.
I was 8.
I do have to tell you that my dad used to tell me a story when we lived in Nashville that Reba McEntire used to come and see him. He's an eye doctor. And he would always talk about how long her hair was. Apparently it was really long in the 90s. I don't know.
It was.
And then she cut it all off, and then she went on TV.
I watched the music video last week. And then I ended up studying acting in college and realized kind of in college that I was funny. I was goofy in high school, and I've always been goofy, but I think there was part of me, because the pageant stuff, that I wanted to be the princess. And it was my hair's blonde and my eyes are blue, and I think that's just what I'm supposed to be, but it's just not who I am as far as my personality. And I was just like, God, never a princess, always a dwarf. and that's how I would be cast. In college, I was only cast as like grandmothers and children. I played all the grandmothers and all the children and all the plays. And then when I went to Actors Theater of Louisville to work on New American Plays for a year, they said, what's the one thing you want to do that you're most scared to try? And I was like, stand up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I worked for like a month writing down a whole list of all the vagina names. And
that's a long time. How many did you get?
I mean, I had like 30 or so. 30.
I mean, that's
40.
A lot.
Yeah.
That's a significant
number.
I
mean, I need to look for that. I mean, I remember some of them, you know, the bearded clam.
Mm-hmm. Pretty standard.
Beef curtains, pink taco.
Pink taco, I like that.
Yeah, that's a good one, right? A lot of mossy is what my whole family called it growing up. A mossy, and that is kind of disgusting, right?
Yeah, it's really gross.
It's really gross. Yeah, wipe your mossy. It's really nasty. Yeah, so then I started stand up in Louisville, and then I completely bombed. I pointed to different women in the audience that night and said, hey, you know, I bet you have some beef curtains, and everybody hated me. I cried, and then I was like, I'm going to do that again.
Yeah, that sounds good. Like, if I did that, I would never leave my house again.
If I signed up to do that, I don't think I would show up.
No, yeah, that's the thing. There lies, like, the problem.
You're openly gay. Let's talk about being openly gay.
Okay.
Because I'm openly something. I don't know. I think I'm just like queer at this stage.
Now, what exactly does that mean? And maybe this is just kind of like the southerner in me.
Yeah, it's not like a good word in the South still.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I guess I've had like girls that have hurt me that have been like, well, you know, like I'm just kind of queer. Like, and it's like, oh, I'll make out with you, but like, I don't actually want to have any kind of a relationship with you.
I think
it's like, oh, so you're just hurtful.
Yeah. I don't think they're associated with the queer label. They're just assholes.
So I think, and Odd, maybe correct me if I'm wrong, or Kate even, up here in New York and the surrounding areas, when we use the term queer, at least for me,
I think just in some communities, maybe not here. Okay. I also don't mean to speak for the South as a whole.
Okay.
That's kind of rude.
That's fair. But for me, I use queer as I'm not entirely sure what my sexuality is. I know very much so that I am attracted to women as I am engaged to one. With saying that, and my partner and I have talked about this a number of times, we don't know if we're attracted to each other because she's also a woman, or if there's like the other things of like the personality and just mm-hmm. jiving and getting along and having similar interests and like all the other things that kind of make a relationship work. And then her being a woman is a plus. Mm-hmm. So I have a really hard time kind of working out the differences of like, am I attracted to her based on her body first, or am I attracted to her based on who she is as a person first, and then her body being a plus. And I think for me, because that's kind of hazy, because I had a very long relationship with a man that I was also engaged to, it kind of makes it a hazy line for me, because I'm not entirely sure what my sexuality is. I do know that I am in love with this woman, and I plan fully on marrying her and spending the rest of my life with her. But at the same time, I don't know how that would determine my sexuality. Yeah.
I mean, I've been with men. I've had so much dick in me. But I mentioned this the other day to someone that, like, I noticed that when I would have sex with men, my favorite position was always reverse cowgirl. And I really think it's because I don't have to, like, look at their hairy chest. Like, I can just, like, imagine there's beautiful titties back there.
Yeah.
Like, I really love titties.
Titties are great.
Titties. I know you're like you're talking about your partner, and like, I don't know if it's, you know, her body or is it like her mind? And I'm like, I really like mine's titties.
So that's for
great
sure.
Mind, but love them titties. Love you, babe. But I consider myself bisexual for quite a while. And then like now I don't plan to be with anybody else, but I couldn't imagine ever being with a man again.
So coming out to your family.
What a blast.
As someone who has come out to her family. that was fun. Let's talk. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it took me a long time. It took me a long time. I didn't know any lesbians growing up. I can't think of any TV shows or anywhere where I saw them represented. For me, I knew some gay men, but the only thing I knew of gay men was that being a gay man meant you're very flamboyant, you're very girly. Yeah, I had zero representation in my life for that. And I think I started to... really noticed some strong feelings in college. I started watching The L Word.
Yeah, I was about to say, I was like, that was my first representation.
I lived in a trailer with a man and his daughter, and I kept my off-campus apartment because one night a week when L Word would come on, I wouldn't want to stay with him because I would go home and masturbate to L.
Absolutely. Yeah, that priority.
Yeah, I was like, look, I love you. I love our family. I love our trailer. I'm going to go over here and masturbate to these women, and I will be back to make the casserole tomorrow. Eventually, by the time I was like 23, I admitted it to a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And then didn't tell anyone in my family until I was about 25, 26. I'm 32 now.
How did they take it?
Not really believing. Like, it's always, oh, liberal Allie. Oh, mm-hmm. Allie the theater person. Mm-hmm. Oh, Allie believes in everybody.
Yeah, you know? No, my family told me to stop listening to NPR because they were trying to convert me.
Yeah. So. My brothers told me, my oldest brothers told me that, you know, he still loves me, but he doesn't agree with it.
Mm-hmm.
I was asked, like, not to call my girlfriend my girlfriend. Like, I need to say buddy or friend. Don't hold hands with her.
How was
she
it?
She was uninvited to a wedding. Mm-hmm. She was supposed to be my date. I wasn't allowed to bring her because that will take the attention away from the bride if everybody's looking at us being gay. But then there's some people that are really wonderful about it. Like, my mom's really great and, like, loves my girlfriend. But then also, like, when the wedding thing happened, was like, well, you just got to understand, you know, it needs to be about the bride. And I'm like, how can you get this? Is really wrong.
Yeah.
It's really not okay. I felt like it was really going to be a big thing with my dad, and it definitely made him uncomfortable. But I think he's just made uncomfortable by the idea of anyone being with me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, mm-hmm. Just like anyone. The man I lived in the trailer with actually bought a ring and asked my dad when I was like 21 if he could marry me. And he went to my dad and was like, I'd like to marry your daughter. And my dad just looked at him and said, no, you may not.
So your dad's just being a dad, not necessarily like homophobic or anything, just being a dad.
No, he's really not. I mean, he did it, and I think he's come a real long way as a person throughout my life. And I mean, I remember at one point when I first told him, probably when I was around 25, 26, that he said, well, all right, that's fine. I'd rather you marry a woman than a black man.
Yeah. Ooh. That's I've heard that.
Because I had dated black men before.
Yeah.
I've definitely heard that. And it's weird, like, how people bring that up. I'm like, why was that ever an option?
Maybe marry, like, a black woman. So I brought home an Iranian woman.
I was going to be like, maybe it's like... go big or go home.
Who he loves now. He does. He loves Melody, and he's... really has just come so far, shown me that people can really grow. And he really just doesn't give a shit anymore. Like, my brother not being nice to me about the gay stuff and telling me he'd rather me not be this way and things like that. My dad's just like, well, I don't see why he's acting like that, because I don't know if he realizes that there's as many gay people in Durham, North Carolina, as there is in San Francisco. And I'm like, you made that up.
But yeah, that's not
true. I'm glad you're on board. I took you to one lesbian karaoke night.
He's like all about it.
No.
It's funny because my dad, so my parents live in Florida.
Yeah.
And my dad's like, you should really consider moving down here. He's like, Sarasota has such an up and coming gay scene. You would love
that
it. They have pride parades. And like, they have a lot of jobs and everything. And I'm like, first of all, no. Second of all, fucking no.
Yeah.
Yeah. You would be over it in like a day. It's like everything is so cheap and then really warm all the time. And then you're there for more than 24 hours. And you're like, there's so many crazy racists here.
Yeah, everyone in my family but the monkey doctor voted for Trump.
Oh, ooh,
and
that
the day
real fun.
After Trump was elected, I had to fly to North Carolina to go to the wedding of my cousin that I was not allowed to bring my girlfriend to.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, I cried so hard. Like, I missed my flight. I missed three flights. I just couldn't get out of bed. I couldn't stop crying. And like,
an appropriate response, though.
Mm-hmm. My mom has a lot of mental illness, and it was very important that she be at the wedding. And, like, if I wasn't there, that meant my mom wasn't going to get up and get ready. And, like, I had this duty to do, and it's just the last place on earth I wanted to be. And finally I show up, and I'm, like, waiting in line in Southwest, and I'm crying so, like, just snot and just scream crying in this line. And this young black guy's behind the counter, he's like, damn, miss, what's wrong? And I was like, Donald Trump is my president. And I have to go to North Carolina. And he came around and like gave me a hug. Oh. And then he was like, man, you're supposed to pay like a $200 fee, but don't even worry about it. I got a free flight because I was so upset.
I mean, at least one good thing happened that day.
Yeah, right?
I was in shambles for a long time.
Yeah. I remember, so my brother got married last May, and I remember leading up to his wedding, and he invited both Chrissy and I. And leading up to his wedding, I'm like, is it okay if we dance together? And he's like, do whatever the fuck you want. It's my wedding. You're happy. I'm happy.
Well, he also lives like,
He's in SoCal. He's in California. So it's like very different. But my mom was still struggling at the time with my sexuality and like me being with Chrissy and everything. So I was like, do you think mom would have an issue if we dance together? And he's like, I don't give a fuck. Just dance. And I'm like, you're so sweet. I love you. I hate you, but I love you.
Yeah, I have a cousin. She also did not vote for Trump and invited me and my girlfriend to her wedding in Richmond, Virginia recently, or Virginia Beach, Virginia. And we went to that. And Melody was my date, and it was great. And my niece and nephew were there, and I'm now allowed to say girlfriend. And, like, it was on New Year's Eve. So mm-hmm. right at midnight, we're all standing there as a family, and we clink our glasses, and we all go to kiss. And, I mean, I kissed my girlfriend. I did not ram my tongue down her throat or anything like that. And my brother's gotten a lot better. This is my oldest brother, who before said he like didn't want me to be gay and stuff, and he kind of just, we did that, and he just goes, oh, I mean, do you have to? And my 9-year-old niece just goes, what, dad, what's the big deal, it doesn't matter.
If it were only that simple, because I can't tell you how many times we, like my family and I, have been watching a movie, and it's the same sort of reaction if like two people of the same gender kiss, and you're like, they're like, I just don't want to see that. You don't have to do it in front of me.
See, I do that when two straight people do it.
I
really do. I literally put my hands over Chrissy's head. I'm like, ew, straight. And I cover her eyes.
But literally, I don't want to see anybody doing anything. Like, I don't want to see anybody's tongues. Like,
no.
It's too gross. I don't want to hear the noise that people make when they make out.
The lip just, smacking?
Like, the lip smacking. It's too much for me. So I just apply that blanket to everyone. It doesn't matter who you are.
Yeah. No PDA.
But he did come up and apologize.
Good.
Which was a big step.
That's awesome.
That was a big step.
It's also like, it really goes to show that, you know, even with your brother being who he is, and then his daughter just being like so nonchalant about it, like that gives hope to the future. And like, kids are amazing. Kids are just like, oh, cool, you like girls.
She also wrote an original song called Allie and Melody. They're together forever. Nothing can stop them. Allie, Melody, they're together forever.
That's so sweet. So it's so good.
Shout out to Spalding Clayton. She's the best.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Oh yeah, so I'm really interested because my family is also very Trump-centric. So I have a policy that I'm just like saving up all of my arguments with them for a time where it like is like it directly impacting someone that they know in my life or me, and that we can like have it out, because there are a lot of comments that are made and I'm just like, I can't argue with you every time I see you about very sensitive things, because I would just end up bawling. So like, do you talk to your family about politics at all?
Every now and then I'll get pissed off and say something.
Yeah.
But and I've tried to explain, like, do you not understand that like it hurts me?
No, that's exactly it. And I feel like
by voting for him, you're saying that you don't think that I should have equal rights, that Mike Pence has said that gay people should have shock therapy. Do you think because I love a woman, I'm mentally ill? Like, well, I don't. And then, you know, the argument's always, no, it's for financial reasons. It's for this. And I'm like, well.
But there, those other things,
my rights
are
still in jeopardy.
Yeah. Those are really important things. Like,
it's like, I have a mental illess, but being, you know,
oh,
LGBTQ.
I'm bipolar as hell, but like,
yeah, but like my sexuality has nothing to do with my mental illness.
Yeah, no, exactly.
So you talked about bipolar disorder.
Mm-hmm.
What's that like? How did you get diagnosed with that?
My mom, my grandpa killed himself, my mom's dad. And then my mom's been out of, in and out of psych wards since, I think, since I was 17. Noticed like my depression got, I tried to kill myself when I was 15, and then got sent to the woods in Tennessee to a Native American rehab.
That I can't, like, I'm smiling not because that's great, but because that's like super classic. Like, you get sent to like alternative school.
I'm an eagle, so that's pretty cool.
What does it mean?
I'm a graduate of the Native American rehab. We studied the medicine wheel. So
okay.
The part of the mouse is when you can only see what's right in front of your face. And then you move to the part of the bear where it's all about introspection and looking within. And then the eagle can really fly above and see the bigger picture. And then the medicine man, I mean, you're just a healer, a real buffalo.
You're not there. You're not there yet, though.
I'm not. I don't know. It takes a lifetime to make it to be a buffalo. But I also haven't, like, done much studying. Yeah, and this is all just also, like, a bunch of white Southern girls in a cabin who, mm-hmm. like, they went a little too wild and their parents were like, ah, go to the woods. But, yeah, so I, at that point in time, I was diagnosed with manic depression, mm-hmm. which I didn't know until this past year when I had a really bad episode. I've had, like, different spouts of depression, self-harm, really bad anxiety, kind of like spinning, where like spinning suicidal thoughts when I get into like a really bad place. I'm gonna cry.
It's okay. It's totally welcome.
And it's also a very hard topic. So like, yeah. if you want to veer off course, okay. that's okay.
No, I think
too.
It's important to talk about. Yeah, so this past year, I quit drinking. I was a very heavy drinker. I think I was kind of definitely using it as some self-medicating.
Yeah, with absolutely. It.
But really did a lot of research this year on bipolar, since I found out that my manic depression is actually bipolar. I was in the hospital for a little bit earlier this year and then decided to quit drinking and went on the keto diet. I've been smoke free for one day.
Congratulations.
Keep up the good work.
I mean, I'm really killing it. But yeah, I think I've just decided like I want to live. So I'm just trying everything I can do and just not drinking and eating good and doing these fucking exercises, and all of it is supposed to help me even out a bit. And not mess with my meds. Drinking can really mess with my medicine's ability to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to ask you, did they put you on meds when you went to the reservation?
A lot of different meds. I mean, one of the units, I got to work in therapy on this because there's definitely some major trauma from being in a place like that I haven't really realized until like now. Like, oh, I was in a lockdown unit for 3 months where I didn't go outside, like, mm-hmm. of one big room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those places are like, but I'm a cheerleader, but not funny.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. But then there's parts of it where I think it saved me. I think that, I mean, the doctor told my parents, they were like, you can take her home, but I guarantee you she'll be dead in a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I needed that at that point in time. I needed someone that was going to watch me 24/7. And be honest, they were too drunk. They weren't going to watch me 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
So, see, tragedy makes comedy. Do we see my point here? Yeah, but I've been on meds for a long time. I went off them at one point because I was probably 28. I got to like a really. It's feeling real great, and I'm like, life's working out. I don't even need this. I don't need it. And I got weaned off it appropriately and everything, and I spent 5 days locked in my bedroom, and I don't know why. I ripped out a lot of my hair, and I just mm-hmm. had, like, I went to my doctor with, like, a Ziploc bag full of my hair, and I was like, I've just been in my room ripping my hair out, so
I think we should maybe like medicine again, like, maybe.
So it's like, you know what? I got highs and lows, and it's some kind of chemical imbalance, and there's nothing I can do about it, and I just have to take the meds.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you have to.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was a hard thing for me to accept, like, because I wanted to think like, eventually I'm gonna be okay and it's gonna be better. But maybe me being okay means me doing all these things to help myself be okay.
Yeah, definitely. I'm right now trying to like come off of my anxiety and depression meds, and I'm going through the same thing. It's like, is my brain chemistry just going to be off? Because like, is my brain just like sort of broken and I need help? Or am I just like leaning on this really hard? Like, I don't really know. And it's really, I'm like scared shitless.
Yeah.
The last time this happened, I was like depressed for 3 months and it was horrible. So yeah, no, I think it's a hard like conclusion to come to. Like I really struggle with being like, I'm going to have anxiety and depression for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe that makes me a little tired.
Yeah.
Makes me a lot tired.
A lot tired.
It's like, so we've talked to a lot of our friends have anxiety and depression. And I think it's fair to say that a lot of people within our age group experience anxiety and depression. And one of the things that I've noticed is that a lot of people are like, you know what? I'm going to have this for the rest of my life. I'm going to have to be on meds for the rest of my life. But it's because of the meds that I am able to be a person and be mm-hmm. a human. And I think there's a certain point. As somebody who hasn't been medicated with antidepressants for depression, I've been medicated with antidepressants for my migraines. Hmm. As somebody who hasn't had to experience antidepressants for depression solely, there's a point where it's like, you know what? I just came off them and now I'm going to go right back on them because mm-hmm. I need them, mm-hmm. you know? And like for me, I'm lucky enough to have other coping mechanisms that don't require medication, but it does require therapy every other week and, you know, coping mechanisms to get me there. And if I don't get there, I start like tweaking and like bugging out. But even then it's like, okay, I need to do this for myself. And if I'm not doing this for myself, it's going to lead to bigger issues. And I think a lot of people with medication, they first hate it, then they realize that like, no, this actually isn't so bad because I get my life back.
Yeah.
And I think that realization is important, but I think coming to that realization is hard. It can be really hard.
I think coming to the realization that I had to quit drinking was really difficult for me. It's such a big thing in the comedy community. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, you're always at a bar. You get paid in drink tickets. Like mm-hmm. for so many shows, you know, after a show somebody comes, let me get you a shot. Like it's just such an accepted thing in mm-hmm. that community, and it's hard to not feel left out. But yeah, just like all the research and been like, oh, this will make my medication not work, like I can't do this, mm-hmm. was a hard one for me. Oh, and taking your meds at like the same time every day.
Mm-hmm.
That's
my thing. I can't do it. It's so, I don't know why. Like, I'm so good at following rules and I love like structure and schedules, but like I'm supposed to take part of my meds in the morning and I can never fucking remember to take them.
Reminder app. Set one that goes off every day.
I've set, and this is the thing, I set apps. I have like had a post-it system mm-hmm. in my kitchen, like on my coffee pot. Literally, I can't.
Yeah.
There's something about it.
I had to train myself to take birth control, like, right as soon as I wake up because I don't have a regular cycle. Mm-hmm. And I need hormones to help keep anything in my life balanced. And I'm on progesterone, so, like, my window of taking it is even smaller. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm taking it 4 hours later. This is fine.
I can notice, like, a significant difference, too, in how I feel when I'm doing it all correctly. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm just like, God, I wish I could get my mom to do it. I just feel like she would be such a different person.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, she complains all the time, but I'm like, you won't take your medication correctly.
So
yeah.
Yeah.
Do the thing.
It's also like all the other stuff for me, like that makes me really tired. Like I know I have to exercise, mm-hmm. you know, a certain amount per week. Or I feel really bad. And like in the winter, I have to use like, you know, a sun lamp and I have to take extra vitamins and I have like all these things. And this is the first winter in which I've done all of those things. And I feel much better than I did last winter. You know, it's just it takes a lot of work and like maintenance. And I'm like, I'm already taking my medication. Like, why can't I just
eat? Why can't this be enough?
Yeah. I think too, like I'm a very nurturing, mothering kind of person. And I think that I've had to learn, like, it's okay to do something for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that maybe in doing something for myself, I'm better for my partner. I'm, like, mm-hmm. and, like, okay. that, like, to me, before, that felt selfish.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I'm like, oh, well, I'm going to take this extra time to go work out. I'm mm-hmm. going to take extra time to sit down and read a book today and do something for myself. Like, that always felt like, well, I should be you know, I should be doing a fundraiser for autism or just always feeling like I got a lot of my self-worth from giving, and it still does feel very good to me, but I had to realize that it's okay to be nice to myself.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think for me, like, my anxiety is always telling me I need to be productive, and so I'm constantly, like, doing stuff, and if I stop doing that and I go work out, or I, like, I don't know, like, have a cup of coffee in the morning without doing anything else, I, like, my brain is, like, in overdrive. Like, I have to-do list. I need to, like, get dinner ready. I need to, like, make a grocery list. I need to whatever. Like, yeah, it's, like, really hard to sort of, like, shut that down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How's your support network? I imagine your girlfriend is, you know, super supportive. She's there.
She is the absolute best. Yeah, I had to go in the hospital this year. And she was there each step of the way. She's on the phone with every single person in my family. Some of them who she can't stand, but she came in, she was like, she does love my mother. My mother's a lot. Like, she's a lot. And she was like, I just talked to Deborah for 2 hours. And I'm like, I love you so much. Thank you. Thank you. No, she's great. She's wonderful. Yeah. I don't know what else to say other than, yeah, she's my rock.
Yeah, and I think that's so important. I have a couple of friends who have bipolar disorder, and it's really hard to be supportive in a way that's going to be helpful for them sometimes when they're in, like, really, really low spots or really, really high spots. And I think it's great when you have a good, like, working relationship in those times that can be really flexible, because that's really important, because when you have a disorder like that, like, your brain chemistry is just a little off, and, like, you have to have a support system that's willing to sort of, like, shift a little bit.
She can see a swing sometimes before I can. I'll do something, she'll look at me and be like, don't swing on me. And, like, I mean, and, like, good for her, you know? Like, yeah. And like, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's what that was. Like, oh, I shouldn't be crying because I did this the other week. We were going out to dinner, and I found there was a hole in my tights, and I was like, no, we can't go anywhere. And she's just like, whoa, you're swinging. And I was like, yeah, you're right, I'm swinging.
It's like fine. An early alarm system. You talked about autism and raising money for autism, and in the pre-episode, you were talking about, like, working with people with autism. So what's that like? How did you get involved with, you know, working within the autism awareness life?
Well, I have one particular guy that's kind of my world. His name is Mr. Bradley Kent. And I started working with him 10 years ago. I was taking class at Second City, and I just moved to Chicago. I knew nobody. And I made a friend in class that worked as a DSP, a direct support person. And Bradley was one of her clients. And I would just go with her when she would go work with different clients. And I just really enjoyed myself. But when I met Bradley, something just, like, clicked. And I would just be like, can I come to work with you? Like, I wasn't being paid or anything. I just wanted to be around him. And so after just got showing up at his house for weeks, his mom was like, do you want a job? And I was like, yeah, I would love one.
Okay.
And yeah, became his, as he would say, you're my number one girl. We'd been through a lot together. Brad had real severe behaviors when I first started working with him, very aggressive. I'd have black eyes, hair pulled out. I mean, I've had it all. But just, like, nothing has brought me more joy in my life than him. Like, and, like, people would be like, you know, why would you do that? Look at how hurt you are and stuff. And I'm like, because that lasts for 5 minutes. like, you don't see the rest of the day. Mm-hmm. Like, he is my best friend. He's so funny. Like, he picks up phrases. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying, girl? All the time. You call me. Allie, I really miss you. I really miss you all. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying, Allie? You know what I'm saying, girl? And that's because he had this sassy older black woman named Passion that used to work with him, and she used to always say, you know what I'm saying? And so now he says that. When he would get mad, he used to quote Maury, in the case of Baby. Yes. So he would get really, so this was one of the funniest things he used to do when, and it's not good because he would be having a behavior, but what he would say was gold. Oh, yeah? Well, fuck you, Allie. In the case of 2-year-old baby Deborah Clayton, you are not the father. Deborah's my mother. And like that was the biggest insult he could say. No, but it's so amazing that so many things are so overwhelming to him, like just to watch how he experiences the world, and that something's such a struggle. So it's like, I think of like when I struggle with my depression or my bipolar or talking to my parents about being gay, anything like that, I'm like, every day is so much harder for Bradley. Mm-hmm. Like, if he can, and he goes through life with the biggest smile on his face. Like, if he can do that, then like, I can do anything. We do a show together, typically about once a year in Chicago, Stand Up for Autism. Bradley hosts with me. We host the night and then have a different performer. And he's the best host you've ever seen. I mean, Bradley Kent can host a show. He makes everybody stand on their feet in the audience. He won't bring the comic to the stage until everyone's on their feet. Come on, people, on your feet. Come on, guys, get up on your feet. And then he'll make you chant the comic's name. And give it up for Mike Leibowitz. Mike, 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 Mike. It's just like the best thing you've ever seen in your life. At the end of one of our shows, he wanted to have all the comics come up and bow with him at the end. And he goes, all of a sudden he comes up and he's holding the hands of everybody and is about to bow. Then all of a sudden he just gets the whole room chanting, friends, 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 friends. I'm like, how is everybody's heart does not feel so full right now?
So did you, sort of helping diminish his aggressive behaviors, do you think that comes from, like your personal dynamic with him, or do you think that that's just like someone taking the time to like to understand him and meet him where he's at?
I think nobody more in the world has taught me that laughter heals more than Bradley. Like, there's something so amazing that's how we connect with each other, is through comedy, is through being funny. That, you know, I remember one time he was at a Barnes & Noble and he wasn't allowed to get a book. He didn't have enough money. We were there to buy a gift. I'm trying to teach. We're coming for what we came for. We're not spending any more. He didn't like that answer. So he hits the floor and all of a sudden you start hearing, fuck you. Fuck you, bitch. Fuck you, bitches. People are just walking around Barnes & Noble. And I'm like, what the hell am I going to do? I got to get him off the floor. He's screaming, fuck you, bitch, to everybody. And then we got, oh, he's getting some books. Here's some flying books, some fuck you, bitches, and some flying books. And so I just started, nothing is funnier to him than a fart and cuss words. So I just start like walking like a chicken in circles around Barnes & Nobles going, shit, 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 assholes. And he just died laughing. And then we were able to get up and leave the store. And it's like, there's people probably thought I was completely insane. But like, who cares? Yeah, just anytime anything's happening, if I can get him to laugh, everything's okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming, Allie. Where can people find you?
For Twitter and Instagram at acountryclayton. You got to know your brand. I have a show March 30th, Low in the City, 8:30 at the Daily Press in Brooklyn.
Cool. And if you want to find us, you can find us on Instagram at Frau Pow Podcast and Facebook at Frau Pow Podcast. And you can also send us love letters if you want on Gmail at fraupowpodcast@gmail.com. And don't be a dick.